The Ball Year Round podcast is brought to you by Essential Coaching, allies in holistic coaching and educational program development. Essential Coaching aims to produce exponential generational change by creating the deepest connected coaching community in the world. Your pain points are real, coach, and Essential Coaching wants to help you feel more fulfilled and happier in your career. Join coaches and educators spanning three different continents for real, relevant, and necessary professional development. If you'd like more information about Essential Coaching, visit their website at www.essential-coaching.net. Again, that is www.essential-coaching.net. Enjoy the show.
So you ended up doing Western Washington kind of as like a closer to home kind of option.
Yep. So closer to home, had a lot of guys I was familiar with. So looking at the roster, there's a lot of guys that I grew up playing with, playing against. They had a pretty solid squad. The GNAC as far as Division II basketball was really talented. Really, man, the league was crazy. The league was really good. But what appealed to me was just being 30 minutes from home, having my mom, my dad, grandparents, best friends, just having the whole crew be able to come watch the games and just to have a place where, like, when I'm done playing, I'm still a part of the community.
Yeah.
So that was kind of becoming more important to me.
So you ended up grad assistant there, right? For a stretch.
Yeah, so that was kind of later on. That was actually after I got done playing.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. So I had 2 years at Western, and then, I went and played overseas for 6-7 years. And then I coached community college ball for 2 years, thought I was going to go the coaching route, went back to school, got my teaching certificate. Kind of when I was done playing, I was like, there's no basketball training jobs in the area to apply for. It was like, what do I want to do? And for me, I've always been motivated by staying in shape, being active. I've never been like sitting around like, how can I make $1 million? I've never been just motivated by money. That's just not me. I'm motivated by living comfortably and living how I want to live and kind of doing the things that I want to do. But so I went back to school to PE. I got my PE in health degree just because I was like, man, I love working with the youth. If I was in a gym every day, I would enjoy that. It'd make me happy. So I went back to school, coached at Western for a year, and just kind of realized, man, it's actually kind of funny. It was an article in Sports Illustrated that really solidified me not wanting to chase college coaching. It was just kind of about the current climate in our country, just as far as, and it's not every kid, right? But the article is from the perspective of an assistant coach who, he's spending time away from his family, recruiting kids that, don't necessarily care about what he has to say and about what he has to offer. They got their headphones in, they just want to be recruited, they want to post about it, things of that nature. But it wasn't really about the kids aspect. It was more about having to be willing to go anywhere, right? And I just spent 6 years kind of going back and forth all over the world. I'm at a point where I'm like, I want to put some roots down and be somewhere for a while. I've been everywhere for a while. Now I want to be in one place and kind of establish myself. And just kind of thinking about the college coaching route, I was like, man, I'm not willing to just move to Kentucky or North Dakota, or, it's kind of what you got to be willing to do. You know, and if things don't go well after 3-4 years, boom, you're fired and you're back at square one. You got to move somewhere else. So after the odyssey that I just been on, I was like, I don't want to do that. I need to find a way to make this happen here. Yeah. You know, and people that I really, whose opinions I really valued and trusted, I'd they'd say, Tyler, what are you going to do? And I was like, well, I want to train. And they're just like, you want to train? Like, where are you going to do that at? Like, you know, no one's doing that around here. And so it was, that was kind of a little defeating for a little bit. But I kept plugging away, met the right people, and certainly got help from the right people, and got into a position where I was able to kind of start building what I'm doing now.
Oh yeah. I mean, I feel like, someone's like, well, no one's doing that around there. It's like, well, then there's a opening in the market.
Right.
There's definitely demand for it in that part of the country.
Yeah, it's just, it's tough because there's not a lot of private gyms being ran, especially basketball gyms. So, you know, getting access to something like that is it's not easy at all. I mean, and it kind of just happened. Really, I was coaching community college ball here in town, and there's a family that had a couple talented players, and their dad wanted me to train. And I was like, sure, I'd love to. And he's like, well, how about, you know, he basically walked into this, this church where they had a court. It was like, he kind of negotiated for me, with the guy I'm partners with now, kind of negotiated for me. Cause I was just kind of shy. And I was like, I didn't know how to go about it. I didn't want to, I don't know. I was just a little humble about it. I didn't want to go in there and ask him for some reason. So a parent basically made it happen for me and got my foot in the door. And the people that run the church, gave me a really good deal to get started. And it's just kind of snowballed from there. And so Daryl Taylor, that's my guy. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now. So definitely thankful, because there's just not a lot of places around here that do that. You know, when the pandemic happened, I'll keep it all the way real. We were in that thing every day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was an outlet for me. Now, I wasn't training like a ton of kids, but, you know, after the pandemic happened, people were like, hey, are you in the gym? You know, kids need a place to go, man. You need an outlet. So, it kind of saved my life in a way, and you know, certainly, and having, having a job through what we went through. And then of course, you know, I think the youth needed it just as much. You know, we needed each other. You know, they needed a place to go and work out and get out of the house and have an outlet. So it's been a really cool deal.
That's awesome. That's tylermeyatraining.com. If anybody wants to take a peek, if you're in Pacific Northwest, he's the guy to hit up. But so just a rewind back to Western Washington, how did overseas ball get on your radar? Was there like a global basketball summer league kind of thing, like a pro-ammy kind of with European guys tryout? Or
so my assistant coach at Western, Rob Visser, he's Dutch. He was on the Dutch national team back in the day, and he was still in touch with the agent that he had. And so me and a teammate from Western, he kind of plugged us with this agent, and he got us on a team in Leeuwarden in Holland. And so that's kind of how that started. And to be honest, overseas wasn't even really on my radar. I didn't even really know that you could do anything like that until I got to Western, until like my senior year. And I was like, oh, I can go play overseas. Like, it was like, it was almost like I don't know how to describe the feeling. It was a relief and it was exciting. It was like, man, you know, of course I want to make the league, but I knew going to D2 was going to really, you know, hinder that. And so having the idea of travel for me, the idea of traveling the world and playing ball, I was just like, yo, we can do this.
Yeah.
So yeah, again, really lucky to have a coach that, had great connections, that cared about me, that was willing to go to bat for me and put me on. And from there, you know, kind of, actually I had a different agent for every job. I didn't really get blessed with one agent that really took care of me. You know, I kind of had to grind and to network to get different jobs everywhere I went. Tommy Lloyd actually got me my second job in Germany. So, yeah, he continued to bless me even after I left Gonzaga.
That's awesome. Is there a place that you would say that was your favorite through your journey during the time that you were overseas?
Man, so, I mean, I can think about favorite memories from every different place. Of course, I've been asked this a bunch of times. When I think about the people, the best place that I went as far as how the people treated me was Syria. Now I went to Syria. I always get this part mixed up. We're getting old now. I think I got there February 2012. Mm-hmm. It's either 2012 or 2011. One of those years the uprising in Syria started. It started in March. I got there in February. So the current conflict that's going on in Syria right now, it started March 2012. And again, I might be off by a year, but I got there 2 weeks before it really started. And I lived in an all-Christian village in Syria, which is a unique place to be in the Middle East, to be in an all-Christian village. Me, myself, I'm not religious. You know, I like to think I'm a very spiritual person. I got love for all people, all religions. But I have lived in Saudi Arabia. I lived in Saudi Arabia a few years after Syria, and I kind of got to see the difference in cultures. You know, like in Saudi Arabia, nobody invited me over to their house to have dinner. You know, I didn't take offense to it. That's just not what they do. That's not what they did. Great people. Muslim people treated me great. Always showed me love and respect. Syria was just the folks in Syria were just a different level, man. They had never had an American before. And so everybody wanted to meet me, wanted to meet the American. I must have had dinner in 30 different homes. They all cooked me the same dish. There was this chicken and rice dish that was just so fire. And I was like, oh, give me sajia every time. What do you want? Sajia. They sent me home with a big bucket of it. Man, I put on weight out there. But the people, man, they were just so, like, everything was just so genuine and heartfelt. And I think, my idea was that, like, you know, there was turmoil kind of coming up in the country. And there was, you know, there was, like, a lot of mystery around it. I'd be asking people, like, hey, what's going on? I'm in Syria with them. And I'm living in a 3-bedroom house by myself. The only channel I had was CNN. Now, I remember this, the top 3 stories. I don't remember the third, but the top 3 stories in the world at the time. Number 1 was the Japanese earthquake. Y'all remember that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Number 2, the crisis in Syria.
Yeah.
I'm in Syria. I'm in this big empty house. Like, dang, I hope they don't know I'm here.
Wow. Because, you know,
now the beard was a lot more dirty than it is now. So, you know, you might mistaken me for a Syrian. But then they see the tats and they're like, okay, he's not from Syria. So it was interesting, man. You know, I'd be like, what's going on in Syria? And, you know, people would be like, oh, America talked too much. You know, they thought that the American media were blowing things out of proportion. Syria is fine. Meanwhile, I'm watching CNN and it's like, you know, people are getting sniped in Damascus, which is like 2 hours north of where I was. I was kind of smack middle in the country. I don't know if y'all know where Aleppo. Aleppo is up by Turkey. Damascus is kind of south. I was right in between, right on the road to both. We actually played a game in Aleppo and I had 40 points, 20 rebounds. We won in overtime. Like, I love my team, man, but I haven't seen y'all play. I would take both of you over some of the guys I played with. Just love those guys. And I would tell them too, like, man, y'all aren't getting it done. But we went in overtime, and after the game, they made me run 2 or 3 city blocks to the bus. And they're like, this dude was like pushing my head down. He's like, go. And we're in Aleppo. And I'd just been seeing the stories on CNN. Like, my heart's thumping. And I get on the bus, and this big Syrian dude that made me run, he gives me a kiss on the cheek. He's like, good game. I get on the bus. I'm looking at my teammates like, why did I have to run? Why did I have to run here? What's going on? Like, no one was saying anything to me. Like, I still don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know, but I like to think like there's a bounty on my head. Someone's like, this American's doing too much. He's got 40 points. They win the game. Kill him, you know? Oh, no, I'm just joking, right? Come on. But I mean, it could have been, it's a possibility.
Yeah.
Very real possibility. Like, I was probably, while I was there, Hillary Clinton, she was the Secretary of Defense. She made an announcement, no Americans can travel to Syria. I'm like, I'm already here. It's too late.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it. I lived in this small village. I trained with a Syrian bodybuilder like almost every day. Like, that's where I got my swole. You know what I mean? That's where I really learned a lot. That's where I really started hitting the weights, which is crazy. Again, you see a theme. I'm kind of late to the game, a little bit late bloomer, but still made things happen in my life. You know, I should have been, if I would have been on the weights he had me on in high school, if I would have been on the skills that Tommy had me on in high school, if I would have been more aware, you know, I'd be, you know, if I'd have grew five more inches, I'd be Chet Holmgren. Yeah. You know, that close to being Chet Holmgren.
But that's wild,
man. Syria, man. Oh, I wish, I truly want to go back one day.
Yeah.
This is, you know, just a little side note about how unaware I was. You know, I was like, man, Syria, I didn't even know where it was on the map. I was like, yeah, I'll go. I was like, what are they doing in Syria? Like, man, I'm not gonna, you know, narrow-mindedness. And I was like, I'm not going to bring nice clothes. Like, they're not wearing nice stuff in Syria. I don't want to waste my nice clothes. And so I go out there, man. I'm the only American these people have ever met. And I got like these baggy jeans. I got like flip-flops and this crummy polo on. And the first time that I go out, like, it's like a Friday night. And, you know, it's all Christian village. So, you know, the ladies didn't have to cover their face. And you can drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. Which is a little bit different than other places in the Middle East. And so I'm like downtown and it's dead. It's dead empty, nothing going on. And, you know, I'm having a drink with somebody and then like 7 o'clock hits, church gets out. And suddenly there's thousands of people in the streets, thousands. And they're all dressed to the nine. Like, the ladies are looking gorgeous. The fellas like got like ties and sweaters and their hair's perfect and they got the cologne on. They all smell fresh. They all look good. And I'm looking at my fit like, oh my God, what was I thinking? I'm so unaware. Like, I just like assumed these things about this country and how these people acted and dressed. And I'm so off. And I'm in my head, I'm like, man, these people are like, what's up with these Americans? What is he wearing? This dude's got baggy jeans, flip-flop, and a crummy polo on. I'm like, man, you know. So I showed him my heart, though. I think I showed him the heart of a loving American, of a genuine, appreciative American. But definitely didn't show him any swag as far as or style as far as my appearance and my clothes. Well, second part of that question, though, for the scenery, I lived in New Zealand for 6 months, and New Zealand was absolutely, I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan now, so I had to go where they film Lord of the Rings and see all of that, and, you know, kicked it with Gollum and, you know, Gandalf, you know, I really got into that, so.
That's awesome. So it was New Zealand, Germany, Netherlands, China.
Oh, wait, here, let me back up. Here, are you ready? I went to Holland. From Holland, I did nine-month season in Holland, and I did 9 months in Germany. Then I played CBA China. I played on the best team in China.
Yeah, the Tigers are good.
Man. And when I got cut, I had a really bad groin injury, and I was getting paid so well at the time. I didn't tell him. I was like, I know once I tell him, I'm gone. So I eked it out for like another month. My play deteriorated, but I got that check. And then they cut me for Smush Parker.
I was going to say, was Smush there yet? Or did you, yeah. Were you guys passing checks? No, so that's funny.
They really needed a point guard. you know, I think we were 23-4. We're number one team in the league at the time. And I got cut. But, you know, at that point, I had played 9 months in Germany. And then I played the whole summer at home with the Bellingham Slam. Mm-hmm. One of these championships right here. And so I didn't really have a break. And then I show up to China and I'm doing preseason workouts and I'm just like killing myself trying to make this team. And so I was actually thinking about this last night. I was like, I was really burned out, you know, and I had like a golden opportunity in a great league on the best team. And I was tired, man. I was mentally tired. I was fit. My body broke down physically. Like I needed a break. And I wasn't able to realize that. I was like trying to go hard. I'm like winning the mile race. I'm smoking them in the sprints and this like, and they're like looking at me like, what are you doing? And this is 08. And so they had just hosted the Beijing Olympics and six of my teammates were on the national team. So I had like the best players in China on my team. These guys were on McDonald's Big Mac boxes. I mean, y'all know how many people are in China. These dudes are the face, you know, they're everywhere. So everywhere we go, people, I mean, these guys, you know, have y'all ever been to China?
No, I want to.
I'd love to.
Man, if you go to China and just say you're a basketball player, you will have 100 people trying to get your autograph.
Yeah.
I never felt so famous than when I've been in China. But these guys are like truly uber famous rock stars. And so these guys are like low-key jerks. People would come up to them, they just, you know, like they would just shun people. And I was like, part of me, I'm like, man, you guys are jerks, man. But then I realized that it happens to them 100 times a day. Everywhere they go, they got 10 people in their face for an autograph. So after a while, you're just like, man, get out of here. Yeah. So but that was cool. It was cool at times. It was really rough at times, that experience. And so when they cut me, I was like relieved. I was like, I'm ready to go home, man. I need to rest. And so I actually went home and I got cut that January and I was home for a whole year. It took me a while to get healthy. I didn't get anything that fall. And then the following February, 2010, I went to New Zealand, played there for 6 months. That was a beautiful experience. It was tough too. I'm going to keep it real with y'all. The basketball gods, they served me one. You know, I told you I went undefeated my senior year. Well, I went defeated this year in New Zealand. Now, it wasn't entirely my fault. It was a new team. They were coming back in the league. They had a three-year plan to kind of grow the team. Well, this is year one. So year one, their plan, pay two people. Now the rest of the league, they're paying 6-7 minimum. So me and one other guy were the paid pros and they had a bunch of high school kids. I'm talking 18, 19, 20 year olds on the team in a league full of grown men. So we went 0-18 and there was really nothing I could do, man. I was top 10 in the league in points, rebounds, and somehow assists. I'm like, how am I averaging 6 assists? I got no one to pass to. Love those guys, but they're 19-year-old kids, man. So that was tough. And I was kind of bummed that they didn't ask me to come back the second year because I'm like, man, give me a couple more guys around me. I won't take all these bad shots. These bad shots are the best shot we're going to get. But great people in New Zealand. Yeah, even though we didn't win a game, it was still an awesome experience. Absolutely beautiful country. And then after that, I did a tournament in Taiwan. So I went there. So team was based out of Taiwan. And then we went to China for the Asian Cup. One game we play against Iranian national team.
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes in the first half, I missed 1-3 at 0 points. Not a good look for the import. Second half, 9-12 from three, 37 points. I went absolutely bonkers on these guys, man. It was, I wish I had the video. I hit 6 threes in a row at one point. Like I was shooting from like 6 feet behind the line. Like it was dope. But And then after that, that's kind of when I got into the over or to the Middle East market. I went to Syria and then came, you know, played really well. And then I got a little tryout. I went to, where did I go? Tunisia, Africa, played in the Asian Cup. From Tunisia, I went to Saudi Arabia, played there for 6 months, averaged 30, got picked up for a couple cups. And it was around this time in Saudi where I had started to develop this tendonitis in my knee. Kind of didn't really get some good opinions on how to take care of it. It didn't get better. I had a 6-figure contract back in Saudi with the best team. I didn't get healthy enough to take it. Oof. Career over.
Dang.
That was 2013, 2014-ish?
2012, 2013. Yeah, I just averaged 30, like, you know, Middle East. I love the idea of the Middle East because they had shorter seasons than Europe and they paid more money. So I was like, man, you know, at this point, I was like, I kind of like being home. I like what I'm kind of building back here. I don't want to be gone that long. I like going somewhere. I like the idea of being there for 6 months and making as much as I do in 10 in Europe, but actually more. And it was just kind of living in obscure places. I kind of got off on that a little bit, like being in Saudi Arabia and thinking like, man, nobody from home is ever going to see some, you know, like some stuff like this. Right. so that was really cool. I like that. A lot of lonely days, a lot of time by myself, but I think time well spent and certainly just crazy perspective. You know what I mean? I'll never forget getting home from Saudi Arabia and just having like the craziest beard and just like, you know, I haven't seen a woman's face in like 6 months. You know, what kind of listeners y'all got? Just so I know what kind of stories I should tell.
No, you're good. You can say anything. There's no, you know, we just throw the explicit tag on it or something. All ages.
I'll keep it PG as I can, but like just to give you an idea, some of the interesting things I saw. So I'm living on the east side of Saudi Arabia. There's an island country called Bahrain. And it's literally, you drive this big bridge across the water to this island of Bahrain. And they have a U.S. base there. So there's a lot of great restaurants. They had a cool mall. Like Saudi, you know, you can't go, you're not going to the movie theater. You're not going out to restaurants. You're not seeing, you know, you go outside, you go out to a bar, you know, they're not serving any drinks, which that's fine with me, but all dudes, you know, just a little bit different atmosphere, right? You go to Bahrain to go to a club and, you know, see some folks. So me and some of the Americans, a couple other guys, you know, we got a cut a car, went to Bahrain, turned up a little bit. Just an interesting side view of life over there. Like every woman that I met was a prostitute.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I'm in the club having a drink. Someone approaches me and I'm thinking, man, this is cool. Someone wants to talk to me. And, you know, 5 minutes later, they're asking for money from me. And I'm just like, yeah, I see a pattern. I'm like, you know, that's not what I'm about. I'm not into that at all. I was like, maybe I'm going to meet my wife out here. I don't know. You know what I mean? These girls are like trying to get their drinks paid for and stuff.
You pay enough, no.
Man, it created some really awkward situations, but funny nonetheless. I'll save some other stories from other times. But no, I've never
you were a target walking in there as an American.
And nobody ever got any money from me, that's for sure, or love for that matter. Yeah, interesting stuff, man.
That's wild.
Yeah, so my kind of career ended there. I didn't get healthy enough, and that's kind of when I kind of started on kind of creating some roots at home, putting some things in place to set myself up here. But I did get one last opportunity to play, and it was like, you know, I felt like that at the time my career ended, I was like 31, 32. I felt like, man, I'm in like the prime of my career. Like I'm balling. I got the, you know, my name's hot in the Middle East and I wasn't able to take it. Like that was that was tough for me. And so I was always like, man, I got to find a way to get back overseas somehow, just to say I did it, just so I can end on a different note. And I had a really good friend who I met in China, who put me on a tour in China with Tracy McGrady. And so 2 years after my career ends, I toured China on a 16 city tour with Tracy McGrady. And so that was unbelievable.
What was it? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, he hit two game winners in the first three games. I'm inbound in the ball to him. I'm like, man, don't throw this away. Like, just get it to T-Mac. Get out of the way.
Yeah.
No.
Was this like an Adidas thing?
Just a T-Mac thing, you know, because he played with Yao, and so he's really
all right
with China.
That makes sense. You know,
China loves basketball, man. I've actually been to China 4 times. So I went once with the CBA, once with T-Mac, and I went on 2 other tours. And, you know, they'll get tour teams and, you know, have you playing against – I went on one tour where it was like a group of, you know, pros, American pros, and then it was like Australia, China, and New Zealand junior national teams. And so there's 4 teams, and we went to like 4 cities and played each other once. So, you know, just stuff like that. I played against a junior national team in China. But yeah, the T-Mac tour is unbelievable. I remember we'd be in the airport, me and a couple peasants, not T-Mac, you know, T-Mac's the king. Me and a couple peasants would be sitting next to each other. We'd look over and see T-Mac and be like, yo, that's fucking T-Mac right there. like everywhere we went, like this is a joke. We'd be in the airport like, yo, Tracy McGrady right there. This is like a joke, man. Like we're sitting here living the dream, walking around with one of the greatest players to ever play the game.
Yeah.
Here I am starting alongside of him. You know, me and him are the 2-3. And I was just like, man, all I got to do is pass the ball to T-Mac, and they paid me, and we're staying in nice hotels, and you know, there's 1,000 people at the hotel after the game. Like people were going crazy for Tracy McGrady.
Wow. Yeah. Incredible. I've heard so much about China. I was on like a flight and a guy was like, hey, you coach basketball. Like you're still looking for an opportunity. He's like, you need to try going to China. And at the time I didn't really like necessarily, I was like, ah, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. But then like looking at what it was like, and now hearing this, I'm like kind of kicking myself. Like, why didn't I just, you know, reach out, try to take one of those 5-star type jobs over there, you know, like
yeah,
water.
Oh man. Yeah. They got academies and, I was actually, kind of plugged with like really the guy who kind of like created this major pipeline from US to China, Bruce O'Neill, rest in peace, Bruce O'Neill. But he created a major bridge from US to China, and he's built all kinds of relations and helped me get over there and put me on a couple tours. He actually ran, it's called United States Basketball Academy, and it's out in the middle of nowhere in Oregon. Like it's in the middle of nowhere, and there's this academy, 3 courts, dormitories. I actually went there for a tryout, and that's how I got put onto the CBA, which is crazy. Like I remember I was at this tryout with God Sham God was telling me I got game. Like I'll never forget God Sham God looking at me like, you got it. Like I was destroying everybody at this camp, and just happened to be one of the assistants from Guangdong is there and picked me up. It was kind of crazy how that all happened. But yeah, that's awesome. My first experience in China, I remember I left and I was like, I never want to come to China again. And now looking back, I realized how burnt out I was. I'm able to admit that now. I couldn't at the time, but I was so mentally, physically burnt out that I couldn't enjoy anything. But every time I've gone to China since, I'm like, and I've seen more and more, like I've seen dang near all of China. Like China is absolutely beautiful. They love the game. There's a lot of opportunity. I really like China, straight up. Thanks. Now I can't say, now I can't, you know, getting on my Enos Kanter freedom. I can't really condone, you know.
Don't get me started. No.
That stuff, you know, but yeah.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's kind of like barnstorming over there too, like the old school barnstorming with the tourists. They kind of go to, like, at least from my understanding, like, not necessarily always the most major cities, like kind of expanding the game a little bit more. But that's wild. I mean, with T-Mac, that's got to be a different level.
Have y'all seen Avatar?
Yeah.
You know, those hanging mountains. Mm-hmm. So they got the inspiration from those, from these mountains in China. And I remember on a particular tour, we must have been driving through these mountains for like 5 or 6 hours. And I remember seeing homes that don't even, you know, they don't even have a driveway. They got like a trail where like the cows, you know, walk them home or something, you know, like just really remote places. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're at an Olympic village or at an Olympic stadium. You know, out in the middle of nowhere, because, you know, they built quite a few when they hosted in 08. And I remember just driving through these unbelievable, majestic, beautiful mountains. I'm just in awe for like 4 or 5 hours. And I'm like, man, where are we? Like, these people don't even have cars out here. And then, boom, there's this majestic Olympic stadium. 10,000 people show up to watch us. And I'm like, where do these people come from? You know what I mean? Yeah, it was an experience, man. It definitely, you know, great perspective. I try and remind the kids, you know, I mean, I also try to take into account, like every kid I see is going through something different at home, or, you know, everyone's got their own struggles. But, you know, after you go overseas and see some of the poverty, I mean, there's poverty right here in America too, but yeah, just trying to remind the kids how a lot of the kids, you know, they're really blessed, really rich. You know what I mean? You got a parent at home, you got a roof over your head. If someone made you lunch today, you know, you got two legs and two arms, man, like y'all are richer than most.
Right. Yeah. Definitely gives you some good perspective. Other than, what was it? Shunji, the chicken dish that you had, is there any other, dishes that stick out to you that became favorites that you stumbled across in your travels?
Man, I am like, unfortunately, I'm like the pickiest eater you ever saw. Yeah, when I was in China, it was like chicken wings. That's messed up. You know, my teammates tried to trick me into eating dog when I was in China. No, but I passed on the turtle. I passed on the pigeon. I passed on all that. Give me Pizza Hut, McDonald's. Cereals where I really branched out. I was like, oh, chicken and rice and almonds? Let's get crazy with it. I'm not the guy to talk to about food. Now, I eat a lot, but I'll eat the same thing. Like when I was in Saudi Arabia, had these guys down the street that had chicken and burgers every night. Get a bucket of chicken and two big burgers. I'm telling you, every night, guys. Wow. I went from that. I eat the same thing. I still at home. You look at my fridge. I got the same. I eat the same thing every day. I've had the same weight for the last 10 years too. So, you know,
it's working.
Trying to maintain. You know what I mean? If I can keep this going to my 50s and 60s, you know, I'm gonna be where I need to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm guessing you're still dunking plenty fine. You're not quite hitting that. That stage,
you know, I could still dunk, but man, it takes a lot of energy at 39. So you know, kids are like, can you dunk? And I think about the energy, and I'm like, I could dunk, but the energy that it takes, how much? Here, look at this video. I still work out now, and you know, I played in the pro-am this last summer. Guarded Paulo Banchero.
Oh, shit.
Guarded Jaden McDaniels. I'm not gonna lie. If you saw the video, you know, I was giving Paulo some fits. You know, the old man strength. You know, he's not used to someone blocking him out every time the shot goes up.
Yeah.
I had a couple moments against him, but man, that kid is unbelievably talented. Yeah. Man, 6'10" with the twitch that he's got, and his form is just perfect. Like, real cool opportunity to play against him. Jaden McDaniels, super uber talented. Didn't want any part of me. He was like, can you not guard me? like, boss, I came to see what this is about, man. Come on. Cause he's, you know, he's like 19 though. I'm like, we're at the free throw line. I'm like, bro, how old are you? He's like, I'm 19. I'm like, I'm 39, dude. You need to be killing me right now. Yeah. And, you know, I think he was just in the mood to throw some dunks down. He didn't want this old dude all up in his grill the whole game. I think I had that game, you know, a little brag moment. I had at 11 points, 17 boards and 7 assists. And, you know, my team was a little janky this summer. Usually I have a real good core group of guys. I had to pick up a bunch of random guys throughout the year, injuries, guys leaving. So we ended up being the 8th seed going into the playoffs, and we beat Jaden's team, the number 1 seed. So that was kind of cool. And I had a little vintage throwback near triple double game. And so late, you know, I still dunk every now and then, but you know, over the last couple, I've broken things, I've hurt things. And I'm like, man, you know, now I'm at the age where it's like the risk reward. Let me just lay it up. Let me get
this. Right. That smooth finger roll going. That's cool though. You can be like, yeah, you know, I beat a first round pick that was literally like last year's first round pick or something. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, man. You know, the pro-am, man, Jamal Crawford. He is the best, man. Jamal Crawford is. I've had the chance to tell him this before too. I'm like, man, you're on my Mount Rushmore of people. Like, the things that he's done for basketball in Seattle, for the community. It's just, can't say enough good things about Jamal, man. And you know, I've had a front row seat to watching him since. You know, I remember watching him in high school when I was, you know, when I was a freshman, you know, back to 97. And I've had a chance to interact and, you know, get his number and just text him and get a text back from him. Like, oh man, a couple years ago, I did this, I did a little free clinic, like last minute, all word of mouth. I had 125 kids show up to the gym for a free clinic, and Jamal drove from Seattle to Mount Vernon and talked to the kids, just gave them life lessons, answered every question. You know, I'm telling 125 kids, all their parents, packing out my high school. That was like kind of a dream come true. And then everybody, you know, he stayed, everybody got a pick with him afterwards. Just class act, you know. And he's been running the pro-am, and, you know, really the only reason I'm still going, all my friends now, you know, they got kids and families, and they're old and creaky now. And I'm like, man, I'm still trying to run in the pro-am every summer. Just so I can hang out with Jamal and play against some of these guys that he's got coming through. A couple years ago, I got the Paul George game. Actually, it's not a couple years ago. It's like 2014 or 2016, one of the two. But Paul George came to the pro-am. I got to guard him. That was a really cool experience.
How'd it go? And,
what's that?
How'd it go? Trying to guard PG.
You know, I was a little out of shape. He had now, man, it's kind of a loaded question now. I had no help defense. If I would have had the guys I usually have in help, he wouldn't have had the 40 piece that he dropped. I don't know how many guys. There's a couple clips where, like, I'm low key sticking him on his second, third move, and then he just hits this crazy fadeaway on me. He has some crazy shots. I remember he hit this buzzer beater in the corner, turn around, fade away three. And all I could think of was, don't let him land on your feet. Cause it was like, you know, after he had done that crazy injury.
Yeah. Oh shit. Yeah.
But I had 26. I was like out of shape too. And I had 26, but he had 40, and then he had Trey Simmons on his team. I don't know if y'all heard Trey Simmons, Garfield, Seattle Cat, European champ. He had 40. So they combined for 81. Now I still believe we would have won the game, but Jamal pulled a fast one, and he gave Terrence Williams a jersey for our team. I don't know if y'all know
T. Oh, yeah. Louisville.
Now, T. Will can hoop. What got us wins was the way we played together, and we had all the momentum going into the fourth quarter, and I think Jamal knew it. And so he's like, let me give T. Will a jersey and put him on Tyler's team. And now our teamwork kind of got discombobulated, and we lost the game by, I don't know, it was under 10, 7 or 8. But
Jamal put him on your team to submarine you guys?
Got love for T. Will, but if Jamal doesn't give him that jersey and lets us continue to build how we were, we would have won that game now.
Mm-hmm. That's wild.
But you know, Jamal knows he can't have Paul George showing up losing to my team. So it's the same reason why a couple years ago I had I'm playing Jamal's team in the semifinals of the Pro-Am, and Jamal didn't even play because he thinks he's going to smoke us. And I got 30 going into the fourth quarter, and we're up 10. And now Jamal comes off the bench in the fourth quarter, and I'm guarding him. And this is the only time in my life where, like, I'm sticking Jamal because he's cold. He's cold. He's not even warmed up, but he comes in the game. And every time I guard him, they call a foul. I shouldn't be saying this right now, but they call a foul. And they got his team to win. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? No one's coming to watch me play in the Pro-Am championship. Jamal's got to be in there. So, you know what I mean? I took a couple L's in the name of, you know, got to have Jamal in the championship. But I got a lot of pride, too. You know, I'm like, yo, we would have won those games.
When did you get involved with the Crossover League? What was your first season? And when did you cross paths with my cousin Chuck? How did that all come about?
Oh, man. So started playing the Pro-Am in 2007.
Oh, shit.
So, like, right when I was done with college, I started going down to Rainier Beach every weekend, spending my summers in Seattle. I mean, I couldn't think of anything better, man. I'm seeing guys I played against in high school and college. Now NBA cats are coming through. This is a great way to stay in shape as I'm trying to prepare to go overseas. So, man, I'm gonna be 40 this next August, and I'm like, for the last 5 years, I'm like, one more summer. I can do it one more summer. And like after this last summer, I felt my body like, God, you're done. And then a week or two later, I'm like, I gotta play until I'm 40. Yeah. So I think I'm gonna give it one more run next year. I don't know, we'll see. But Chuck, man, I'm trying to think. So I'm pretty sure we crossed paths. I started playing. I played for this little semi-pro team called Everett Explosion, and this must have been around the same time, 2007-ish. And Chuck was like the mascot.
Yep. he was the mascot of that team, right?
Yeah, but he was like, I don't know what he was, man. But he was like, you should have to send a picture of what his outfit was.
Yeah, but it looked like Boltman or something.
Boltman, yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So that's how I met Chuck. I remember like this, I'll never forget the Boltman mask coming up and then this just fiery red hair coming out, and I'm like, who is this dude all sweaty and fiery and red? Chuck's great dude, man. And then he kind of built a relationship through the love of the game, through that organization. And then he refs, and I was coaching community college ball, so I'd see him through that. And Chuck's funny, man. Chuck, if you're watching this, I remember Chuck defriended me from Facebook, and I messaged him. I was like, Chuck, what's up with this? And he was like, something about conflict of interest. Like, dude, nobody cares, Chuck.
It's like, I got a letter from the NCAA.
Chuck, we see that Coach Tyler won the game, and you're also Facebook friends. We thinking I made some extracurricular calls.
Wow. Yeah, shout out Chuck, definitely, yeah. Appreciate it.
Chuck, I'm gonna bring the smoke, Chuck. I love Chuck. Chuck's good people, good energy, always has been. I haven't seen him a whole lot the last couple of years. I don't know what's he doing now.
Busy man, got some kids, he's an electrician, full time, and then he's doing the reffing still in the evenings and weekends. So he's a busy guy.
Yeah,
no, not a lot going on, but I'm sure you'll see him at the Pro-Am or something this summer.
Oh, yeah, he's a great dude, awesome dude. I appreciate him putting us in touch. And, I see a little bit of Chuck's red tint coming through the beard.
That's my other side. He's actually a cousin by marriage. He's my stepdad's nephew. So we don't have any blood relation, but, I wish I had a little blood relation to that family. They're tall as hell. I only got the 6'3", and then stopped. I needed that 6'5", to dunk, so.
Right. Chuck was a hell of a mascot now, man. That dude went hard. They had him on the trampoline dunking and stuff. Like, it was actually a really cool experience. Now, the owner of that team interesting cat, maybe a little fraudulent, I don't know, but you know, it's another story. But we played it like this arena, like it's a legit arena. They had the dance team, they had Chuck doing crazy stuff. I mean, it was a whole vibe. It was really cool.
That's funny.
Yeah. Then here's a side note. They didn't really play me. I was like, I was barely getting playing time for these guys. Now the guys that were playing, love the guys, you know, but they were kind of like, you know, Seattle area legends like Donald Watts, Rashad Powell, Jamal Murray. If these guys ever see that, I love you guys. Y'all should have played me. They didn't play me. And then the next year, so that year they're IBL, International Basketball League. And then the next year, there's a team called Bellingham Slam, which had a lot of former Western guys closer to home for me. So I go play for them naturally. And we smacked Everett Explosion from that point on.
Revenge.
You know, and they, you know, just saying, you know, they should have been playing me. But no, good people, good times. Rest in peace, Coach Randy Redwine. He was the coach of the Explosion at the time. I played for him in the Pro-Am for years. But, yeah, man, ball is life.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. Ball is year-round as well. Yeah. You got some trophies behind you. I know you pointed one out. What are the other two sitting there?
So all three of those are all from the IBL Bellingham Slam. I think I only won two of them to keep it real. So one of them we won the championship in 2008. We had actually a team. This was like kind of when IBL was there was like a West Coast league and then the Midwest. And so the team we played for the Midwest was from Elkhart, Indiana. So they fly to Bellingham for the championship game. And I'm battling against this guy named Christian Charles, this 7-foot, big bouncy Afro dude. He played at Villanova. And so we're battling in Bellingham in 2008. And then years later, we play against each other in Saudi Arabia in like 2012.
Wow.
Crazy. Small world. Yeah. But me and my buddy Paul Hafford got co-MVPs of that game. That was a really cool experience. And then oh yeah, so this is 2008 right here. And then these three, we got three in a row, 2012, 13, 14. 2012, I was hurt. That's the year that I came back from Saudi, I think, and I was hurt. I didn't play. I elected, and I could have been like a coach on the team, but I was like, let me just be a fan of y'all. So we won it that year. Then 2013, I was assistant coach. 2014, I was a player coach. Mm-hmm. And some games I would coach, some games I would play. Championship game I played, I think I had 27 points, 10 boards, player coach. It was a really cool experience where it's like me and a group of my friends. Mm-hmm. And if you guys ever get a chance, man, I'll send you the video, but 2014 IBL championship game, it was absolute clinic. Like we're like the San Antonio Spurs, man. We had not only do we have like incredible talent at every position, but we just played really well together. Like no one cared who got the buckets or the glory. Like the mantra was like, hey, if we share the ball, we're all going to eat at some point and we're going to win. So, man, if you watch that game, it was just absolute clinic. Had some really good players on the team too. Blake Poole, D2 player of the year, D2 All-American. Just a lot of great talent, but it was really cool to, you know, kind of be head coach my peers and make that all work. You know, it's like I'm trying to tell y'all what to do on the court, and then afterwards let's go get something to eat.
Yep.
And talk. And so it's kind of a just a fun experience, man. Great time.
Yeah,
I can tell a really dark story if y'all want to go there.
Yeah, otherwise, let's go there. Yeah.
You want to go there? I'll tell you some crazy. Y'all don't know where I'm going now.
It's all
right. I'm going to go there. So the guy who I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but just to tell y'all another crazy story. y'all are gonna be like, why'd you bring this up? So I played at Western, right? 04 to 06. And we win the IBL championship 2014. So our manager, our basketball team manager at Western, 04 to 06, he becomes the owner of the Bellingham Slam. And so, you know, he did a lot of really cool things with Western and the alumni, putting together alumni games, getting guys to play for the Slam. Like, it was this whole community. It was really cool. And actually in the Pro-Am, I finally was like, I was tired of playing with Isaiah Thomas in the Pro-Am. Love IT, but I'm like, man, I'm not driving to Seattle to watch you shoot 60 times a game. I want to be involved. So I was like, Jamal, let me get my Slam team in the Pro-Am. So he let me do that. And I was like, well, I'm player coach, but they didn't want me to be player coach. They wanted me to have a coach on the bench. And so I get our team manager, because I'm like, he's not going to coach. He's just going to run substitutions. I'm still going to coach, but he'll look like the coach. Again, I don't know why I'm telling you all this, but this might be when keeping it real goes wrong. this is like 2018. I'm losing track. I'm getting old. 18 or 19. Basically, we come to find out that our team manager had been filming us in the shower for a 15 year period.
Holy shit.
What?
Is this where y'all kicked me off the podcast?
Yeah. Oh, we cancel his ass now.
I'm telling you, it's crazy. It's crazy.
You let him in the crossover.
Well, we were wondering why he was so willing to bring towels and soap to the crossover. We thought he was just being nice, you know, because they didn't provide that. And he had always, you know, he'd been our manager, so he'd always been in the locker room with us. So it wasn't anything for him to be there. You know, we were like really close with him. We were probably some of the only friends that he ever had. And yeah, it's not like a black and white thing. Like, I had a lot of really good experiences with this dude. And personally, I didn't think he had sexual preference. I was like, I never saw him with a girl, and I didn't think he was gay. I was like, maybe he's asexual. I don't really care. We did great things through basketball together, but that was like crazy, right? Yeah. And so it's a crazy story, man. And I'm kind of laughing right now. It's not a funny situation. Like I had to go to the police about it, and it took me a while to go because I knew what would happen. And he actually committed suicide. After it came out.
How did you guys even find that out? Like,
so he was holding the basketball clipboard like this and the phone like this, and like I get out of the shower and a couple of the guys are like, hey, he's filming you. And I'm like, no way. He's probably writing an article for the game, because he wrote all the articles for the Slam. Like, man, I can't tell you how many times I was in the paper because this guy. How many times I was on the radio because he was promoting and pumping up, like, just made us look really good. Like, got my name out there in so many ways. You know, helped me create some buzz for playing overseas. And so when the guy said that, I was like, no way. And then I actually had to go walk by him to get to my spot to dress. And as I walked by, I looked down and I see the camera on record. And I was like, oh no. So in that moment, I'm like, what do I do? Do I rip the camera from him and beat him up? Or what do I do here? Do I make it awkward? So I didn't do anything. I just felt like, you know, no one's physical harm is being compromised at the time. So, you know, let's go talk about this without spooking him. And he worked at the student rec center at Western. And so that's where my mind was like, man, what else is going on here? You know? And I was like, I don't really want to, you know, we were like, man, how do we approach this? Yeah. And it took me 2 weeks, and it was like obvious, like from everyone I talked to, I needed to call the police. And it wasn't really, I wasn't necessarily offended about him filming my old ass. It was more like the possibility of like, what else is going on here? You're working around kids. And then actually after that, the next day, I actually caught him doing the same thing with the clipboard and the camera, filming like a 21-year-old Western player. And that's when, for me, I was like, this is, you know, this is really wrong. But again, it took me time because, first of all, you know, I don't, you know, love the folks around me, but it was like on me to call for some reason. But it took 2 weeks for me to call because I knew what was going to happen. Just knowing who the guy was and how he was going to react to that, I kind of knew it was going to happen. So I was dragging my feet because I didn't really want to put that in motion. So yeah, unfortunate, tough situation. Like this crazy story though, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, you're the victim there, obviously, amongst many other victims too. So that's always tough to like come forward in those situations. You know, that's
brutal. It's part, and honestly, you know, it might not be, it's not the glamorous, it's not the cool story, but it's part of a story. You know, obviously I felt a lot at the time, like a lot of like guilt, like for what had happened, you know what I mean? And I like told the cops, I was like, look, I want to know what was going on. Like, I want to, not, I don't know if justified is the word, but I was like, I've known this guy for a long time. I want to know what he was up to. Mm-hmm. So sometime after he passed, they had me to the police station, and I don't care what anyone's sexual preference is, truly. That's your business. I realized really quickly that I personally am not gay, because I had to watch an hour's worth of video, and I had a headache from that's so-and-so. I had to give him like 15 names. And I was like, I had to watch way too many videos, but it was, you know, like I'm seeing video of myself from like 2004 to 2019.
That's wild. That's brutal.
Yeah.
So he, I mean, it's too bad he didn't get some justice, but
yeah, man.
I guess.
Not the glamorous story or the coolest story to tell, but you know, man.
It's part of the journey though. Maybe it'll make people or someone more aware of a situation that, you know, like you were there for 15 years and he was doing probably the exact same trick that you guys caught him on eventually for 15 years. And like, you know,
yeah,
now people know that trick out there is, you know, someone's holding a phone and a clipboard at the same damn time. What are you doing?
You know, for me, I think, you know, and honestly, I really haven't shared this story. You know, I've talked to people individually about it, but I've never shared this story. So this is like kind of the first time I don't know if this is you want to call this a public forum, but this is the first time I've actually told this to anybody, outside of just a conversation with a friend. But for me, you know, that first day when I found out that he had passed, it was really, you know, it was really, really hard, because he was a friend in a lot of ways, and I cared about him in a lot of ways. Obviously don't condone what he did, but he was still, there's a lot of really good parts to him. But after that day, I tried to turn it around in my head. Like, I work with kids every day, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, people drop their young kids off to work with me, and I don't take that for granted and at all. And for me, it was like, I try to use that situation and empower what I do. Like, I want people to trust me, you know? And, I don't know if you can have your trust violated as much as having yourself filmed for 15 years without your belief, you know what I mean? And so for me, it was like, how can I flip this to like strengthen myself? And really it's just like, you know, I have to be someone that the community can trust and believe in, you know, and I'm always going to do right by the kids. And yeah, I did make that call, and I did have to make that tough decision and go through that. But it's, I want people to know, like, I don't ride with that type of stuff. And I'm always going to stick up for what I think is right, and for, and always have the kids back. You know what I mean? And I'm never going to be associated with anything remotely close to this. And clearly I'm going to be on the other side of it. If you're doing some shady shit like that, then, you know, I'm going to be there to call you out for it or for whatever.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We definitely appreciate you, you know, opening up on that. That's like, I mean, even if there's just one person that hears this and is like, you know, that actually, that coach, like, or that, whatever, like not even a coach, teacher, anything, any sort of authority figure, non-authority figure, like, you know, if they can make that connection and you affect one person's life from that story, like that's huge. Like, so yeah, we definitely appreciate that.
I mean, sometimes your gut tells you things and you got to listen to it. I mean, I don't know what I would have done differently over that, you know, we had no idea it was happening, but I think it just comes back to, you know, doing right by people ultimately, as much, you know, as best you can, always giving back to the kids and taking care of them and every kid, you know what I mean? And obviously that's an extreme situation. And, you know, me and a buddy, we talk about youth sports a lot, and we like to joke that we're the youth sports police, because we see so many coaches and parents treating kids in ways that just aren't right. And obviously that's extreme, beyond extreme. But, you know, there's always things in life that can kind of bring you back to who you want to be and the energy you want to put out, and, you know, just always doing right by people.
Yeah. No, and I was actually talking with a coaching friend of mine yesterday, and he said people either have a good memory of you or a bad memory whenever you meet them, you know. And so that the fact that, you know, unfortunately what did happen, you're able to, you know, turn it to a positive. And, you know, like Mike was saying, like, I hope that, you know, this gives other people strength, you know, if they're in a situation where they don't know or if they're unsure. But like you said, your gut's telling you, you know, you got to do the right thing, even if it's a very hard thing. But then, you know, obviously later down the line, you eventually can find your peace and find where you can then impact the next generation, man. So I give you a lot of credit, and thank you, you know, for, like Mike said, opening up and sharing that with us.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, thanks for listening. And again, man, I'm just kind of like, I'm an open book, man. So when thoughts and things come up, I don't really shy away from bringing it up. And that's not really one of those stories that you write down like, oh, I can't wait to share this. And I truthfully didn't even know I was going to talk about it today until it just kind of came up. But I don't shy away from things like that. And again, I think, you know, when part of the lesson is like, you know, for me, when I had coaches that didn't treat me well or didn't speak well to me, for me, it was always like, that's not how I'm going to be to the kids. That's not how I'm going to treat the kids. Or, you know, I think you try and you got to take any negativity, the experience, whether it's the extreme story I just shared or, you know, a way a coach is slighting you, or, you know, you got to find a way to turn and flip that and be a better version of that and give a better version back into the world.
And now you're in the position with your Reign AAU team. So could you kind of talk a little bit about what you guys are doing and how you guys are building that? And, you know, are there any trips you guys plan to take?
Man, so I'm kind of a little bit of a one man biz with my Reign crew. So I'm coaching three teams, doing training. I got a fifth grade team and I have two eighth grade teams. One of the eighth grade teams I kind of inherited during the pandemic. I was training all of them, and their feeder program they weren't able to get into schools. And so I kind of had one of the only gyms that was open in the area. Didn't have an opportunity to play, so I agreed to kind of take them through the pandemic. And then after the pandemic, they kind of wanted to keep riding with me, and I was willing to keep coaching them. So I got inherited the team. For me, I think as far as like growing my business, this has kind of been something I've been talking with folks about. But the tough part for me is, you know, I have been jaded a little bit where I don't trust everybody. And after that last story, you might see why. I'm very protective over my business and the gym and the influences, you know, like I really, obviously I trust myself and the coaching I've been given and what I give to the kids. And not that I'm special, but I've had a lot of special people impart wisdom and coaching on me. And I'm confident in those lessons that I share. Right. But in my area, particularly, there's not like a lot of, not a lot of folks that are wanting to do my type of biz that have any type of pedigree, that have played overseas or played college ball or even had success at the varsity level. And so what I kind of an issue I see with issues with programs in the area is, you know, you might have someone that had played the game and they start a program, but now they got to get, you know, parents or, you know, maybe athletes that didn't really have any success near that they did coaching their teams. And so I think that's where things get tough. And now you got to answer for coaches when, you know, you're not there all the time or you're not able to really develop and kind of get extensions of what you do in your program. So for me, that's been tough because I haven't been willing to let that go and just like, okay, you know, if I offer 12 teams, you know, or go, hey, we're going third through high school, I got to get coaches to fill all those spots. Well, you know, maybe I only got two people that played now. Well, I got to go get a parent for each one. And of course y'all know, you know, it doesn't matter. Even if you're a really good parent coach, and there's obviously great parent coaches out there. They're still going to bring some sort of, there's always going to be people that are going to complain about it. Well, he's only playing so-and-so because he's their parent or, you know, and then of course you have those parents that do coach to kind of help their kid along, you know? Yeah. So I just think it's kind of tough for parents to operate in that space either way. So I think for me, you know, I'm not a parent. And so I'm truly there to help develop all the kids. You know, I'm not there, you know, my program, I haven't done tryouts the last couple of years. I've just, my mindset was like, I want to invest in this group of kids and I want to develop this group of kids. And certainly if I had tryouts, I'd have turnover and I'd have maybe better kids coming in. But that's not something I've been wanting to chase. It's just like, let me get the best kids possible. I feel like that's a tough route to go. Mm-hmm. But I'm also learning about, you know, some repercussions of not doing tryouts. But I'm just trying to find that balance where like, I don't want to be just chasing the best players, trying to build a competitive group, but I'm also trying to invest in the kids on the end of the bench too and develop them and help them grow. So for me, as far as like growing the reign, it's a little bit tough. Like I love what I'm doing and I'm prepared to continue to like this grind is something that I love. I don't see a point where I'm like, oh, let me get a bunch of coaches underneath me so I don't have to coach. I love to coach,
yeah.
You know, or with the training as well. It would be great at some point to be able to kind of build a team of like-minded individuals and kind of, you know, get some. But it's just, if I was in Seattle and I had a bunch of ex, you know, UW guys and, you know, maybe some pros and, you know, you build a team that way, that'd be a little different. But in my neck of the woods, it's a little bit different. But, you know, in my gym, I think I touched on earlier, I get to train boys and girls, young as eight. You know, last summer I had some overseas guys that worked out with us every day, lifted, you know, I got a little weight room, so we're lifting weights. So I got my overseas kids, a couple kids I trained, they're in college now. And then, you know, the area high school kids. So I got like this really good group of summer kids where they're seeing some pros, they're seeing some college kids, and I got the younger high school kids working with them. So I feel like that's a really unique environment. You know, I got my teams fluctuating age, fifth, eighth grade. Spring, I usually do high school boys and girls. And then summer, I'm doing the pro-am. And so, you know, I'll pick up really whoever I'm connecting with. Could be some area kids, could be some Western kids. You know, I got some guys that played at Western that are overseas pros now. They come play on the team. So I feel like throughout the year, I get like just such an awesome curriculum and such a different varying age groups. And you know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm really proud of that. And I just started doing some fitness classes. I got some friends in that. And so, you know, I'm getting the old heads in there, getting shape and share that good energy. So I know that was kind of a rant about what I do, but I really just enjoy getting to work with everybody. And it all comes back to just having a love of basketball and fitness and wanting to be better and wanting to grow.
That sounds like a fun cycle to be on, honestly. You know, you got a little bit something different every quarter almost.
Yep.
Did you ever end up teaching? You mentioned you got a went back to school, got a teaching certificate. Did you ever go down that like high school coach, English teacher, history teacher route or something like that? Or
no, I'm not built to be English or history. I'm like, y'all gotta have me in the gym.
Yeah. PE, that's the best job in the school, man.
Yeah, no, I could talk health. Yeah, I could go do some health, but you better get me in a gym. You're not going to, I could pretty much guarantee you're not going to have, I'm not going to teach anything but PE and health if I go that route. I kind of did that. Basketball has been my life. And I got to a point where okay, I'm not getting paid to play ball anymore. What am I going to do? And so my gut was like, all right, I'm going to go back to school. I was still kind of like, maybe I'll coach college. But I was like, let me get this degree in my back pocket, the certificate. And like, really my dream is what I'm doing right now. Like what I wanted to do inevitably is what I'm doing right now. But for some reason, I felt like I needed to have that in my back pocket. We're like, okay, if this doesn't happen for me, if this doesn't play out how I want, I have this certificate in my back pocket where I can go and get a job somewhere that I know I'm going to enjoy doing. I'm going to be in a gym. That was just kind of my only focus. So since then, I've been building the training and building the rain, and it's doing really well. I hate to say it, but like the pandemic, it was good to me because my gym doors were open and nobody else in the area was. So everyone was coming to me. I was very, very, very busy. But that was, good business. And now the kids are back in school, I'm kind of changing how I do things a little bit, setting up some different things, make sure I got my winter clinic in place, my spring, I'll do my second annual summer camp. So getting those things going, teams and training. So just kind of like starting to get into a groove of like, let me get like a yearly calendar set up and really make this thing work. So I don't have to go to plan B. This is plan A. I have thought, about maybe going the high school coaching, teaching route. And I think, that would be very rewarding and an awesome job. I don't know if it'd be as good as what I'm doing right now. And so I'm trying to stick with this and continue with this and keep this rolling, because really I just get to share my life experience every day. And I'm still trying to, become a better version of me every day and learn new things. And there's always new techniques and drills and things to pick up. But, really it comes back to principles and fundamentals for me, starting there, because a lot of kids don't get either of those. So starting there and building up. And so just being able to share that every day is easy for me. The heart, that type of work is easy. I love it. And so, trying to keep this rolling.
Yeah, you're living the dream over there for sure, the basketball life. That's, Andy and I would certainly love to be on the cycle you're on. I don't. So you have the winter clinic?
Don't take it for granted, I stay thankful and grateful every day. I definitely don't take it for granted. It's a very unique situation to be, I'm living in my hometown by choice. A lot, it's crazy, what perspective does for you. I know folks that haven't made it out of the valley. There's people that think it sucks here, and it's like, you lived in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, man.
Been to war torn? Have you lived in war torn Syria? Have you been through some slums in China? You see some places like that, and you come back here, you're like, man, this place is unbelievable. It's so beautiful. People are great. So to be able to. And obviously, having won a state championship in this town and played college ball just north, to have all those things rolling and be able to do what I'm doing is pretty special.
Very cool. Very cool. You got the winter clinic the 20th, 21st, 22nd this month, right?
Yep. Filling up fast. We're getting about 75% full. Put it out a couple days ago. So, yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Good stuff.
If you're Pacific Northwest, you can check out his website, tyleramayatraining.com. The PNW Rain is the AAU team if you're looking to get involved in AAU. But if you're just looking for a clinic, amaya360@gmail.com. That's AMAYA360.
You can hit him up for training and anything else, probably basketball wise. Yep. What do you got there?
Yeah. Again, fifth grade, eighth grade champions. You know what I mean? Add that. You know what I mean?
More trophies. Hell yeah. Trophies. That's awesome. You got any games this weekend? I know you had some like a couple weeks ago or something like that.
No, today I'm going to go watch some fourth grade girls that I train play here in about an hour or so. And some sixth grade girl asked me to come to her. I went and watched high school girls last night. So, you know, I like to get out in the community, go watch the kids that I play and support them. And so this is actually my last free weekend for a couple weeks. And I got back-to-back tournaments coming up and yeah, busy time. I think I got something, you know, staying busy every day until Christmas Eve now.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
I love to hear that. And, you know, is there anything, I know you've given so much advice and little pointers throughout this entire show, but is there anything that you would want to, you know, leave our listeners with, or, you know, any of the players that you may have listening with some advice for the future?
Oh, man, that's a loaded question. You might be here for another hour. No, man, that's a tough one because I have like a billion different thoughts right now. So I'm trying to hone it in, but I think becoming aware of yourself, as aware of your downfalls and the things that hold you back, and not shying away from that. You know what I mean? Like if I could go back to seventh, eighth grade, and really analyze my game, like I have no left hand. My form is terrible. I don't have good footwork. You know, I avoided working on those things and I just kind of went with what I thought I was good at. You know, I could run and jump, block shots. You know, if I would have really confronted my weaknesses, and just, I spent hours in the gym dunking, hours. Like I would go to the gym and all I'd do is dunk from every angle. You know what I mean? If I would have been working on jab and go left, and having a jab and go left-hand lane from all five spots of the floor, if I'd have been working on form shooting, I would have been that much better of a player. I think, you know, mentally it's tough to kind of see your weight. It's tougher to see the things that hold you back mentally. I think time and perspective and mistakes do that. I think, understand that you're going to make those mistakes and just owning up to it, taking accountability and just finding a way to get better. You know, my motto that I put on my shirts is grow your game. And that could be, you know, that you could apply that to anything, you know, like a basketball is a microcosm of life. You know, what you put in is what you're going to get back. So if you're not out there grinding, somebody else is. If you're not your biggest cheerleader, who will? You know what I mean? You got to find, and I tell the kids, like, you got to have, what's your comeback? You're going to miss a lay-in in a game. You're going to get scored on. You're going to get your shot blocked. You're going to lose. What's your comeback? How are you going to come back? You know, so just trying to develop that next play mentality. And, you know, we can apply that to everything we do off the court. You know, relationships are going to be bumpy. Schoolwork's going to get bumpy at times. You know, you got to just find a way to give it your best that next play and just to keep growing. That's kind of what life's all about. I'm certainly still growing. I'm sure I'll watch this this podcast at some point and be like, I can't believe I said that, or I didn't mean to come off that way. I'll grow. I'll learn. But that's what life is. It's just lifelong lesson to learning, ain't it? So yes. Keep grinding. You know, have faith in yourself and always be, you know, be coachable and be hungry to learn what you can get better at. I think a lot of times when we're younger, we want to know what we're good at and we want to get praised. And I think if you really want to take the next step, you got to figure out what you don't do well and, you know, make a list of that and make a plan to attack it and get better at your weaknesses.
That's awesome. Cool. You got any, anything else, going on that you want to plug before we wrap her up?
Man, no, I got nothing to plug. You know, I'm training, I'm coaching. If you want to get fit, if you want to get your game right, whether it's your daughter, your son, or yourself, you know, I got opportunity for you in Skagit Valley. And yeah, that's all I got.
Where can people follow on? Do you have any sort of social media stuff, Instagrams for the teams or anything like that?
So, you know, the social media is tough for me. I have not posted one video of a workout. So like I've grown my whole program just off word of mouth in the Valley. I haven't done any advertising. I'm not the guy at the training that's got a camera in your face. I don't nothing against those guys. It's just, I forget, man. I get so wrapped up in what I'm doing with the kids that I'm not like, oh, let me film this to show other people. I'm like, let me stay focused on you to show you what you need to be doing. Uh-huh. I probably should be doing more as far as that. But like I said, I'm staying very busy doing what I love just based off people in the community saying good things about what I do. And that's, to me, that's the best advertisement I could do. But if you want to follow me on Instagram, the handle's Tiger Ray, TYGER_Ray. So Tiger Ray, I post, you know, I like to hike. I get out in nature. So if you want some views and some and some hoops, you know, that's me.
Cool. Is the Tiger from the Guangzhou stop, or is that like a different nickname or something?
Well, you know, my name's Tyler, you know, but I keep it, I'm joking right now, but you know, I keep it G, so you got to put the, it's Tiger, you know?
Is it spelled T-Y-G-E-R?
Yeah. That's how I spell it on Instagram.
Oh, that's great. Hey, like maybe, you know, you were saying you got some kids who have aged out of your program, they're playing in college now and stuff. Maybe you just get a little social media intern and be like, hey, run the Pacific Northwest Twitter or Instagram for the summer, or the PNW Rain, rather.
Yeah, I have a PNW. It's like PNW.rain.hoop, but I haven't posted on it in like 2 years. So
nice.
Yeah.
All right. One of those college interns in there. One of those former players that want something on their resume.
Yeah, I could pick up my social media game. I thought it'd be cool to like do like an ebook or something on just like skills. And so I know there's more to do. I'm wearing a lot of hats right now. So I'm trying to manage it all, but it's fun, man. It's all fun work. It's all hoop.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Love that, man. Living the dream. Hell yeah, man. Well, we appreciate the heck out of your time now. And, you know, I guess it's about late morning there now. Tyler joined us at 7 a.m. on Pacific time. So everybody thank Tyler for you know, getting up early for us.
Yeah, no, thank you guys so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. Hopefully you heard some of my story. I know I get caught on some rants and just start going.
That was good.
But I think y'all got a little bit of everything from my life, the highs of the high, and definitely some of the lows and some of the interestings. So thank y'all for listening and having me on. I really appreciate it. Hopefully y'all get something out of it.
Yeah, definitely. Got a lot out of it, man. So like you said, Mike said, you know, appreciate your time. And, you know, if there's anything, I don't know if we can help you too much, but, you know, hopefully we'll definitely stay in contact. We've talked with Chuck, and when we were in Vegas, we were like, man, we'd love to come out to Seattle. So hopefully, you know, we can make it out there and get to meet you in person. It would be great to have that opportunity. Yep.
Yeah. We'll pick up.
Yeah. Let me know. And if y'all, you know, need other guests, or, you know, you make it out here and want to do anything, let me know for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you, Chuck. Awesome, thank you, Chuck, for putting us in touch.
Thanks.
Oh yeah. Cousin Chuck always coming in the clutch.